Okay, all right. Hello, everyone. Meet Bob. Bob's a software engineer, and Bob just had the idea of a century for a new startup. That's Greycat. Greycat is a service that, given the picture of a cat, will return the same picture, but grayscale. Bob's really excited about that and just got some funding to start working on that. So Bob gets started. Bob chooses to write that in Rust because that's cool and trendy, and use GitHub because that's the standard. And so just writes the initial Rust boilerplate, the initial boilerplate for having that built by GitHub Actions. Then git commit, git push. The first CI run is green. That's wonderful. Champagne. Now Bob decides to do something useful with that code. And so he pulls in Image2, which is the Rust library for doing image manipulations, uses that in the code, builds it. The build is just fine locally. Wonderful. Now git commit, git push. The CI runs. It's not green. It's complaining about some missing header files somewhere. Okay, so Bob, no big deal, but the software engineers, he knows how to use Google, so he searches, finds out that actually this Image2 library is mostly a wrapper around C++ library, which is OpenImage.io, and it turns out that Bob had that installed on his laptop, but the CI runners don't, which is why it's failing on the CI. But no big deal, Bob just tweaks a bit the CI config to install libopenimage.io before running the build. And now the CI is green. Wonderful. So fast forward 1 year later, Bob Corp has grown quite a bit and also did the tech stack of Greycat. It's getting a bit complex, but no big deal. I mean, it's just a matter of having the right CI config file to make sure that everything gets installed. So the config file has grown a bit out of hand with 5,000 lines of code, but it's not a real problem. People just treat it as append only. Whenever they need a new piece of software, they just add that to the config file, add a few lines to install it. Generally forget to remove it if they don't need it anymore, but I mean, no big deal. It works, right? And I mean, it's not like anyone would want to maintain that because just the feedback loop of having to do a change, push, wait for the CI, get the result. Yeah, nah. Okay, better keep it like that. We need to move fast anyway. Causing some troubles every now and then, like for instance when GitHub decides to update the base image of the runners, because given the complexity of the setup, obviously something's breaking here and there. No big deal. Takes a couple days sometimes to fix, sometimes a bit more. Blocking things a bit, that's a bit annoying, but I mean, have to move fast. No, one day, big deal happens. Microsoft, it's now 2025, Microsoft is in a slightly difficult financial situation and decides that this GitHub Action thing is actually, it's wasting money on that, so just decides to shut it down. Well, no, not such a big deal. I mean, it's not like Bob Corp's married to GitHub Actions. They just have to migrate this little config file and use another CI provider. That's what they do, and 3 months after, they actually managed to migrate that to a new CI config by a new provider, but now by that time, competition has caught up, Greycat is definitely beyond, Bob Corp is leaking, bleeding money everywhere, and this is the end of the Greycat dream. So, very sad story for Bob. But could we have avoided that? So there's a bunch of things that went wrong, you might have noticed. But most of these are just like natural consequences of we want to do things the quickly as possible, and so we just like we can't take care of everything. But there's one tactical choice that Bob did at the very beginning, which was what caused the ultimate failure, and that was just being stuck on one single service provider and being at its mercy. And Bob could have avoided that, hopefully. The first, like the elephant in the room, if I may say, is just the Blue Whale Docker, which would have given Bob a way to just have a like agnostic way of defining this CI environment that doesn't depend on GitHub, and Bob could just have written a Docker file instead of the CI config file. So now, some things it wouldn't have solved is that the feedback loop for a big Docker file is not that much better than that of a CI. I mean, Docker's layering system is great for at caching when you only touch the latest lines of the Docker file. If you touch at things at the top, you're pretty much screwed up. The other thing it would also not have solved is that unless you're very, very careful, it's easy to just have lines here and there that might break at any time because upstream decides to change something. And, but I mean, this is okay. The big problem that Bob would still have is that the libopen image IO issue we had at the beginning. I mean, Bob has his laptop, he's working on that. On his laptop, he has the code for the project. He has tool chains needed to build the project. Then the CI or the container has the same code for the project, checking for the same, from the same Git commit, also has tool chains to build it, but not exactly the same ones. I mean, they are provided by a different means, so obviously there's going to be some differences that might break things down the line. If you're lucky, it breaks your build. If you're unlucky, your build still succeeds, but then down the line, something behaves slightly differently, and you have absolutely no clue why. So what would have been nice would have been to just have Bob's laptops and whatever is running the code in the CI use exactly the same tool chains. And there's an obvious solution to that. Just ask Bob to do all his development on the Docker container. That is great. The thing that's not great here is that Bob's laptop doesn't only have tool chains and code. It also has his text editor, his config, his whole development environment fine-tuned for years to just make Bob as efficient and productive as can be. And if Bob has to develop in the container, he mostly can't access that easily. And now we get a very sad and angry Bob and a very inefficient Bob. So now there's one bit of the infrastructure that I barely mentioned in passing but not paid much attention to. That bit is Cargo, the Rust package manager. And the reason why I haven't really talked about it much is not that it's not important. I mean, it's probably the most crucial part of the infrastructure because it's the thing that pulls in the bulk of the dependencies of Grey Cat. But the reason I didn't talk about it that much is that it just worked. I mean, I was talking about broken things because it's always funnier to talk about broken things. And Cargo was not broken, not fun. And the reason Cargo just worked, I think it's like there's two reasons. The first one is that Cargo has been very transparent overall. I mean, the CI runs Cargo to provide the dependencies for the build, and that's fast enough for the CI, that just works fine. Bob on his machine runs Cargo for that, and that works, that doesn't prevent him from using all the rest of his tooling, and so Bob is happy using that. And beyond that, Cargo is also declarative, that like there's one file, two files, that exactly define the set of REST dependencies that your code has. And when Bob runs Cargo on his laptop, Cargo just reads that file and provides the exact environment needed. When the CI clones the project, runs Cargo, it reads that same file and provides exactly the same environment. And that's why it works. Now, there's one thing that Cargo doesn't do properly, and that thing is everything except REST packages. And that's a problem because that's why we had this open image IO problem. And so it means that actually the declarative aspect of Cargo is limited because it's declarative up to some point. You really have to read the terms and conditions for that. And so at that point, like it would be great if only we could have something a bit like Cargo, but more generic. You know, that would be so awesome if only such a tool could exist. Okay, so meet my friend Nix. You can think of Nix, if you don't know about it in that context, as something exactly like Cargo or NPM or whatever you want, except that it's fully generic. So you can use it to package and provide your REST crates if you want, but you can also use it to provide the C libraries that your REST crates depend on, and the C compiler used to compile these C libraries, and the Minio server you're using to run the test, or the PostgreSQL database you're using for your deployment server. And so really now, like declarative is not just a vain word. It is fully declarative up to the lowest level you might want to think of. And so what could happen for Bob if he were using Nix is that he has this laptop with everything set up, and then he can just use Nix to provide these tool chains. And because Nix is transparent, it won't prevent Bob from still using his editor with all his tools. Just on top have the required tool chains to build the code. And that makes a very, very happy Bob. And then the CI system can just use the same Nix with the same Nix config files to get the tool chain. And then the CI builds exactly the same thing as Bob on his laptop, and the world is wonderful. So now, assuming that, Bob is convinced that Nix is the great thing, and probably you are too, right? And what would that look like in practice then for Bob to use Nix? So Bob would essentially drop a shell.nix file at the root of his environment, saying, hey, I want a shell, so calling the make shell function to get a development shell. saying, I want in my shell this set of packages, Cargo, REST, OpenImage.io, whatever you want. And the little bit of magic here is this PKGS thing from which everything comes, which you can you import, which points to Nix packages, the Nix package collection, big repository with recipes for all the packages that exist in Nix, which you can, so I've hidden that, but you can import that in this Nix packages.nix file and pointing to a very specific commit of the Nix packages repository, which will pin down every single version of all your transitive dependencies. And now if Bob wants to use that, he can just run the Nix shell command, be dropped into a new shell in which, for instance, Cargo will be available at a path that is managed by Nix. And once Bob exits the shell, no Cargo anymore. That's what we wanted. But then, I mean, Docker also does that. The bit that Nix has in terms of transparency, the extra coolness, is that the shell doesn't tell anything about Vime, Bob's editor. But still, I mean, Bob can still access his Vime installed globally on his laptop, even inside the shell, which is what we want for development, because it's much, much, much nicer. And when Bob wants some extra guarantees that really his shell is complete, he's not just accidentally leaking things from his computer, you have an extra pure mode that you can use for building things with more guarantees. And so that's Bob machine, but this talk is about CI, so let's look at the CI side of things. On the CI, so Bob would still be using GitHub CI because that's the standard at that time. But then beyond the initial mandatory boilerplate to like just fetch the repository and all that, there's only two things that Bob would need to have in his CI config file. The first one is install Nix, because it's not yet part of the default GitHub image. And the second one is run the build within a Nix shell, a pure one, because you really want to be strict at that point. And then if Bob needs to migrate, all he needs to do is on his new CI system, install Nix again and copy that exact Nix shell command. And now Bob is fine, and we can all send Greycat pictures over the internet. So this was like scratching the edge of the tip of the iceberg. We could go a bit much further, although I only had 15 minutes, so I won't cover all that. But the first thing we could do to go a bit further is to improve the pinning situation. I mentioned, like, I hand waved this, oh, you have this file that pins things down to a very specific version. There's ways to make that much nicer, and using a proper log file like all modern package managers would do, so that you have full control over when you want to upgrade, but it's also trivial to upgrade. More interestingly, you can also use Nix a bit further and not only use it to provide you some development or some CI environment, but you can build your thing fully with Nix, which gives you, I mean, first some extra guarantees that, oh, this is really the right thing I've built in the right environment with the right set of dependencies. But more interestingly, now you can integrate that and use Nix a bit further, for instance, to build OCI images on top of that with only a few extra lines of Nix code, or use that to build AMIs for whichever cloud provider you want to use. At that point, you probably want to care about caching. Nix is pretty great at caching things for that today. If you have a no-op build, it's really going to be a no-op and take you a few seconds rather than the whatever time it takes to build the project. And you can also get that cache to be distributed, meaning that your developers, if that's built on the CI, then your developers can just reuse the pre-built results, which makes their life quite nicer. And the last thing that could be done to go further is to use NixOS, which is a Nix-based Linux distribution, which follows that same philosophy of being purely declarative, which means that you just have one config file that describes the whole system, and you just rebuild the system based on that, which is useful for deployment because that's infrastructure at code, but like really down to the deepest level, not just scrolling.